Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Good morning. Good morning. I've got to stop singing that song. Sorry. It is my morning alarm. I changed my alarm to something much more sedate and it didn't work. I just kept going back to sleep again. So I've had to go back to Debbie Reynolds and Singing in the Rain. So we are in April. Welcome to Quarter Bananas. Everybody's welcome here. What should we start with? I'm going to start, actually, just to get myself organised, with a quick... Let's see if we can get this to work, because last time, when I couldn't get my laptop to work, it was because I'm a complete numpty and I'd actually switched the sound off on my laptop. Not the brightest spark at times, me. So let's see if I can actually get this beastie to function and start off with a tune. And there will be a reason for this. There's always a reason for my rambling, although it may not always be clear to begin with. And we're in April. As you probably noticed, I have a terrible habit of looking up what's happening on this particular date. And today, April the 5th, in keeping with Armageddon Expo, which is on, is also...
Oh, not the other Armageddon, that's also...
No, not that. The fun Armageddon.
The fun Armageddon.
Yeah. Funmageddon, as opposed to Armageddon. Funmageddon is actually, today is, and you may, not a lot of people know this, or probably they do if they go to Armageddon, First Contact Day. I know.
Oh.
According to the lore of Star Trek, April the 5th, 2063... So we've got a way to go yet, was the day that humans first made contact with an alien species.
Right.
I know. I'll give you a little bit more information about that in a bit, but hopefully I can get this to play. And this is a song called Detour by Karen Young, which is about an alien who decides to make a detour to planet Earth, as one does. And it really gives me, this is, when is it from? I think from the 70s, but it gives epic Janelle Monáe vibes and I blooming love it. So let's see if I can actually get it to play. Is it coming through?
I make a date for God. And you can bet your life it rains. I try to give a party and the guy upstairs complains. I guess I'll go
too. So unlike us.
This is unlike us.
I know. I'm going to blast up the
CD1,
volume.
CD1, CD2.
On my laptop.
SDPC.
I'm going to turn the volume up on my laptop so I'll be in the studio. We've got the laptop plugged in, but it's just not.
Is it plugged in so that your output is to the?
Oh my god! Technical
shit. Technical shit. Whoops!
Language.
I was just listening to Access Radio on the way in, and it said they cares about swears.
Do they? What counts as swear?
I don't know.
We could get into a huge debate about
that. We could.
Yeah, but we won't.
But we won't.
Okay, here we go. See, the problem is I'm married to somebody who works in tech, so I don't do any of this stuff at home.
Right.
Do you want to plug it into your thing? Would that be easier?
Into...
If you've got something over there you can plug into?
I've got a USB connector, but I don't know that will do it from... And...
I'm having trouble remembering my password.
Yes, you do. This is non-stop chaos with us, and that's part of the joy, we like to think.
Oh. It is quite cool.
It's very cool.
For the alien day?
Yeah, because I got... oh, hang on. Does that make a difference? No. Oh, maybe we just have to do light background music during this particular...
Until we
figure out how technology works. This is why we need to make contact with alien races. So they can teach me how to use my blooming laptop, frankly. So I would get a thing at home, which is like, oh, just press that button, you numpty. But... otherwise, you're going to hear me singing along to things, which is going to be dreadful.
It's like the whole login trail now.
Yeah.
We'll do the login.
So I've got it paired with headphones, but I think I've got it paired with my headphones as opposed to this. Anyway. That was Karen Young with Detour. I say hopefully, even though it's just in a sort of background-y type vibe, you could actually enjoy it, which is nice. Right. What else am I doing? So this first contact day thing, what it was, let me educate everyone about this fascinating fact. Star Trek, obviously famous for its relative inclusivity of its time.
It was interesting.
Interesting on that front. One of their storylines, which actually appeared later on in a movie that they did called Star Trek First Contact in 1996, has the first contact day as April 5th, 2063. And this film is all about time travel, bizarrely. And it's about time travel because... Ooh, what's happened now? Can you still hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. It's about time travel because what happens is basically Jean-Luc Picard meets some people. The Borg are trying to stop humans from making contact with, if you know about Star Trek, my brain's decided for Star. I know there's a difference between Star Wars and Star Trek.
Star Trek, different.
They're very different. Anyway, so
I'm not sure if you're allowed to like Star Wars if you like Star Trek and vice versa.
Of course you are.
Okay,
you can like anything you want. We're not going to create barriers here. We're not going to gatekeep. So, what happens is basically the Borg could go back to Earth. They try and stop this launch of this ship called the Phoenix, which is going to be the first warp drive launch. And warp drive is what enables people to explore the far reaches of space. Obviously, they fail because otherwise, you know, we wouldn't be here, no. And what happens is they do manage to launch the first warp drive ship on the 5th of April. And the warp drive makes space go, I'm going to go with Doctor Who thing, wibbly wobbly. And that attracts the attention of the Vulcans, Mr. Spock and co. And the Vulcans come to investigate to see what's going on, what is making this wibbly-wobbly happen on Earth. And they make contact with the humans for the first time. And luckily the humans are nice about it, so it doesn't cause intergalactic warfare. So there you go, first contact day. Mm. Hooray. Also, Armageddon is on down at... what is now, I think, the Henry Stadium or something. I don't know. The stadium. What else is happening today? I'm first to do with aliens. I might go and see Project Hail Mary tonight. That's about aliens.
People seem to have enjoyed it.
Yeah. I had to check. I'm not going to give spoilers, but I had to check for a particular spoiler because I would get very upset if a particular thing happened. So I did check some younger folk who know such things.
See, that's the nice thing about ADHD is that even if I look at spoilers, by the time I actually get to the story,
my thing is because I have the same, talking about ADHD, I have the joyous combination of ADHD combined with autism. So I have both sides of it. So I'm hyper-focused but in a really perfectionist style. So certain things I need to know about just in case something goes wonky and it'll throw me off my... I need the element of control with the element of surprise. Yeah. It's a fun thing. I'm really good at organising things, not so good at implementing them, I think it's basically how to put it. So, what else happened on April the 5th? I'm looking at Sue like she's going to give me an answer. Sue's like, I don't know. Don't ask me. I have no idea.
I have no idea. I have the internet here that knows everything.
Don't look it up. That's no fun. So, right.
I could make stuff up, though.
I often do.
Yeah.
No, I don't. It's a lie. I make educated guesses about things. April the 5th was the date, 1614.
I'm just trying to encourage Sarah to turn her computer around so that I can see what she's got on her playlist.
Ah, okay. Well, I can tell you. I can write it down because I have a pen because I'm organised like that.
Because we're...
I'm going to write a list. So
if the technology doesn't work...
The technology never works with us.
The old steam method of get a pen and write it out.
And I have a pen with me. I have a piece of paper is the other question.
Look, I have loads of paper. Sarah's got a notebook here and it's got...
Listen to this, AMSR, whatever it is.
It's got lots of handwriting in it.
I like handwriting, different coloured pens.
And it's actually quite nice handwriting.
I've got lovely handwriting, thank you for noticing.
Yes, mine used to be quite nice and then arthritis has made that quite a challenge. Now I feel like a five-year-old with a pen, you know. Going.
So what I'm going to put down, right, so... Whilst I'm talking, I'm writing. So if I get distracted, don't pay any attention.
I'm going to talk while you're writing.
Yeah.
One of the things that I've been enjoying watching is Mary Trump.
Mary Trump.
Mary Trump.
That's his sister.
Who's Donald Trump's niece.
Niece, that's it, yeah.
And seems to be, you know, one of the ones of the family who's actually quite normal and sane and she does a podcast, and I can't remember whether it's sort of every week or every couple of weeks, with, I think, John Seska, and they do an analysis of a Star Trek...
Episode. Nice. I like
that. In the context of the politics of it and with reference to the current world and terrible goings on, which I think is really, I actually really enjoy those.
That is one of the the things that's actually kind of weird about this first contact thing is a lot of it is about also the end of World War III.
Right.
We won't get into that because it's kind of depressing. So anyway, more rippy paper noises.
Anyway, it started last month and it's ending on the 5th.
Oh. No, well, there you go. They probably well, know
according,
about this.
According to some people, it's already finished and all. But anyway.
Anyway, who knows? If they're Trekkies, then they will know about this stuff. So, right.
I was passing
my list over to Sue now with numbers 1, 2, 3 to make it nice and easy. So, April the 5th, 1614. April the 5th, 1614 was the day that a man called John Rolfe married a woman whose name was Rebecca, but her actual birth name was Pocahontas. I know. So this is Pocahontas' wedding day. I don't know a lot about Pocahontas. I didn't watch the Disney movie, not for clever reasons, simply because the Disney movie came out when I was of an age where that stuff, I was too old to want to watch that stuff and too young to appreciate Disney again. And so I kind of got a bit of a lucky escape. But the Disney movie has obviously been quite widely vilified for being romantic nonsense by a lot of people. The Disney movie is about Pocahontas and a man called John Smith. And John Smith was one of the early colonizers of the States, sent over by an organization called the Virginia Company of London to establish the state of Virginia and the colony of Jamestown, which was the first permanent British colony in North America. And the movie, from what I've looked up on Wikipedia, very sophisticated research, is about John Smith meeting Pocahontas, them falling in love, and him being captured by Pocahontas's tribe, them wanting to execute him, her saving his life, trying to negotiate a peace between the British and the Native Americans. John Smith is shot in the process and ends up returning to England to be treated for his injuries, and that's the end of the film. And it's very kind of like, oh no, I've lost my beloved one. away he goes in the distance. Funnily enough, not the true story. Mysterious. Partly, and this is interesting, this is a weird thing. The reason that I know about Pocahontas is because where I'm from in the UK, Kent, is where Pocahontas is actually buried. I know. Pocahontas died and was buried in the bleak, very bleakly named town of Gravesend. I know. So it was always a thing with me and my mum, kind of this whole like, oh my God, how on earth did Pocahontas end up in Gravesend of all places? So the reality of Pocahontas was, born in 1596. So just as I say, colonization was being promoted in the USA. Daughter of a chief, a man called Wahun Senecor. And his Wahun Senecor, the tribe that he oversaw at this point, was roughly between 15,000 and 21,000 people. So it's a big grouping of people. And she, let's say, was his daughter. John Smith, the chap in the film, the romantic hero of the film, ironically voiced by Mel Gibson, the layers of irony are deep in this, was an Englishman. He was some 17 years older than Pocahontas, and he was one of the first people to be sent over to America as part of this Virginia company to try and establish a colony. So he was there basically on business. And we do know that they met. There does seem to be proof that they met. But a lot of the information we have about Pocahontas is basically about his version of events, his stories. And we have three stories written by him, and they all change slightly as time goes on for reasons we'll find out. So John Smith has arrived in this area that Pocahontas's father is responsible for. Apparently they did meet. It seems like they did actually interact with each other. We have some evidence of him writing down sentences with her name in it, where they seem to be trying to learn each other's language. But at this point, she would have been about 11 years old. So she was a kid. He was an adult. So there's no suggestion of a romantic relationship between them. Also, she was way out of his league because the British would have considered her a princess. So it would have been definitely not okay for him to be involved with her. John Smith was captured by the local people. He was taken to meet her father. And that's where the story diverges. The first version of his story says he was captured in 1608. So Pocahontas would have been, what, 12? Yeah, 12-ish. Mm. And that he's taken to meet the chief. They have a big feast and a big chat, and that's kind of it. Second version of his story, which he wrote in 1616, which is a significant date because in 1616, Pocahontas was taken to visit the UK to meet the King of England. So there's a reason why. This one, he writes a letter to the king's wife, Queen Anne, and in this story, he's captured, threatened with execution, and he's only saved by the fact that Pocahontas literally physically throws herself onto him and says, you know, you'll have to kill me as well. So she's really kind of this heroine. She saved my life. She's amazing. It's presumed this version comes up because he's wanting to hype her up a bit for this visit, because the visit is a marketing exercise, which we'll get to. The third version of the story was written in 1624, which is after 7 years after Pocahontas has died. And in this one, he really, really embellishes the story. He's dragged into meet the chief. There are two massive stones. He's laid down on these two massive stones and warriors surround him, ready to smash his brains in. And Pocahontas again flings herself down, putting her head on his chest so that they'll have to smash her brains in as well. Rah, 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 rah. So it gets more and more exciting as it goes on.
Dramatic.
It's getting very dramatic. More dramatic than
I met this family and I had a 12-year-old kid.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, John Smith, this is all happening around 1608. John Smith then travels. There becomes a war between the British and the local Native Americans over land, obviously. Lots of punch-ups, da-da-da-da-da. Pocahontas is known to have visited the British colony and played with the kids. She was famous for being really good at cartwheels, apparently, because she's like an 11-year-old girl. And also one of the things that she's known for is this colony was starving at some points. and she arranged for food and supplies to be brought to the colonists so that they wouldn't starve to death. So she's a pretty good egg, all round good egg. John Smith gets injured in a gunpowder accident in 1609 and is sent back to the UK to recover from his injuries. So he's not shot trying to save her father. He gets himself blown up a little bit, gets sent back to the UK. At this point, Pocahontas and her tribe are told that he's dead. So as far as they're concerned, he's dead and gone away. So that's the end of the John Smith story. Let's say when Pocahontas would have been about, at this point, she would have been 13 years old. Things carry on. She's kind of a good connection point between the tribes, the local people and the new colonists. And in 1613, she is on the equivalent of kind of a diplomatic trip to, with the British, kind of basically visiting the British settlements and colonists and kind of arranging and organising things with them. The war between the British and the locals was getting quite feisty at this point. So what happened was the British tricked Pocahontas onto going onto one of their ships. I don't know exactly how. There's not really much information about that. When she gets on that ship, they basically then say, right, you're our prisoner now. And they hold her hostage. And they hold her hostage for a ransom, which includes freeing their prisoners and returning stolen weapons and tools that the local Native Americans have taken off the British. So she's then taken to a settlement, a British settlement called Henricus. This point, the settlement, that they, the main settlement is Jamestown, which is the first British settlement. She's taken to Henricus and she's held hostage there. But apparently the conflicting stories about how she's treated, most people say she's treated pretty well, partly because the British knew that if they didn't think awful to her, her father would show absolutely zero mercy. So we don't know. What we do know is that during that time, she was held for a year. She was taught English and she converted to Christianity. And she changed her name to Rebecca. So she was christened into Christianity and changed her name to Rebecca. March 1614, big punch up between the British colonists and the local Powhatan men. And the colonists decide a way to resolve this is to let Pocahontas talk to the Powhatan men to try and get them to settle down a bit. Pocahontas, again, I like this idea, but I don't know how true it is. According to the records, and I will use some language here, bollocked the Powhatan men and said basically to them that they, having not paid her ransom, they clearly valued her less than they valued their stolen weapons and tools. And how dare they come here and make demands when they had, you know, off she went. And then she told them that, I think this is quite funny because again, this was March 1614. So at this point, she would have been 18. She told them that basically she'd prefer to stay with the British and the colonies because they had more respect for her. Thank you very much. Okay. Now, there's a little bit of confusion. Was Pocahontas already married to somebody else? In the movie, they have a thing about her being worried about being married off to a native warrior, a man called Kokum. There is some suggestion that she may have actually been married to Kokum at the time of her kidnap, and they may have had a daughter, but that he was probably killed, and we don't know what really happened to the daughter, but we don't know. Anyway. So she's 18 years old, living at Henricus, and now she meets this man called John Rolfe, so a different John altogether. And in on April the 5th, 1614, she marries John Rolfe. John Rolfe is an interesting chap for lots of good reasons. John Rolfe had left the UK, England, in 1609, heading towards Virginia on a ship that was sponsored by the Virginia Company of London to go to Jamestown with the sole purpose of establishing tobacco plantations. So tobacco industry was kicking off at this point. The tobacco industry in Europe was dominated by the Spanish. The reason it was dominated by the Spanish is because they had a particular strain of tobacco which was basically less rough than the other stuff. It was slightly sweeter and more palatable. So John Rolfe had somehow managed to get hold of some of these Spanish tobacco seeds, which at the time
industrial
was...
Industrial
espionage. Yeah, yeah. Apparently it was like a death penalty offence for selling them. and was heading over to America to see if they could use them to plant over there, start plantations. His ship, he was on a ship with his wife, and I don't think they had a child at the time, but during the process, a child was born. This ship, along with its two other ships, get hit by a hurricane, and they deliberately have to scupper the ship on rocks at Bermuda in order to avoid it sinking completely. And everybody on the ship survived, including the dog. Amazing. So they all ended up on Bermuda in 1609. And they had to basically stay there until they could build new ships to carry on their journey to America. So they're there for about a year. And in 1610, two new ships head over to America from Bermuda with 142 people on board, including Rolf. We don't hear anything about his wife from that point on. It's presumed that she's died in Bermuda, and we know his daughter, who was named Bermuda Rolf, has also died. When they arrive at Jamestown in 1610, Jamestown has only got 60 people left surviving because they've been hit by disease and famine. So basically, Pocahontas and her tribe have been keeping the locals alive by bringing them food and things. So Jamestown would have collapsed if this Bermuda ship hadn't arrived. It's all a bit bonkers. And they bring, say, including John Rolfe, who brings his tobacco, Spanish tobacco seeds that he's nicked or bought from somewhere. And in 1611, he is the first person to commercially cultivate the sweeter imported tobacco plants from seed in North America. Pocahontas's husband, Percy Sequin husband, is the person responsible for the Virginia tobacco industry. Bonkers. I know, it's that whole, what? So every time you hear about, you know, Golden Virginia or whatever, it's Pocahontas's husband. So he does this. 1612, they start exporting this tobacco to England and Europe, and he establishes a plantation. 1614, he marries Pocahontas, Rebecca, and it's said to be that one of the reasons that for their marriage was that he believed that by marrying her, he would be saving her soul from the heathen deities, making her a good Christian woman.
Wasn't she already Christian?
I don't know. I'm just, again, unfortunately, early 17th century, the records aren't entirely reliable.
No.
Yeah. Yes. So he marries Rebecca Rolf as she becomes. And almost exactly 9 months, 10 months later, their son Thomas is born, January 1615. And they're spending this time tobacco farming. Tobacco farming is a filthy business, a really filthy business. Have you ever heard, there's a book called Demon Copperhead, which is a version of David Copperfield, and that's about, has a lot of stuff in there about tobacco farming. It's a really labour-intensive, brutal business. So they're in tobacco farming. They've got this baby son. Tobacco's starting to be shipped back to the UK. It becomes the cash crop of Virginia. So in 1616, the Virginia Company of London, and the Virginia Company of London, much like the New Zealand Company, are a company that were established to sell land and sell the idea of land to potential colonists. So part of the thing they want to do is quash these stories about savages and terrible goings on and starvation and deprivation and how it's all awful. So they basically fund John Rolfe, his wife, and their child to come back to England to do
a
promotional tour. Exactly, a promotional tour. And they come as well along with 12 members of Pocahontas's tribe as the educated savages to show that, the tamed savages they were described as absolutely, anyway, yeah. So they arrive in England in June 1616 and they travel up to London basically to be put on show to show that it was a safe investment. You weren't going to get murdered, all of this stuff. The interesting part of this, so Pocahontas is back in, is in the UK. She's at this point, what, 20? Yeah, 20. And this is when she finds out that John Smith's actually still alive. Because everyone thought he was dead. He went bang and disappeared. Yeah. And one of the reasons, this is brilliant, one of the reasons that they found out that he was alive was because one of the people who accompanied her to England had been told by her father to look out for John Smith because although they'd been told he was dead, basically the English lie a lot. And it might not be true. And they found out that he was, in fact, still alive. And obviously kind of, you know, making money off the fact that he knew Pocahontas. And apparently she did meet him in 1617. And she gave him, again, a bit of a rollicking about the fact that he had never returned to America despite various promises he'd made her father and agreements and all of this stuff. And again, it was nothing, there's nothing romantic in this, more just like, you said you did a deal with my dad and you didn't, you just buggered off and pretend you were dead. You fought a original Perrin for the older amongst us. So, yeah.
She gets probably less endearing than Reginald Perrin.
Probably less endearing than Reginald Perrin, yeah, probably. She does get to meet King James. Apparently she didn't realise who it was until afterwards because... Yeah, he didn't seem very kingly. So she's like, okay, is that fine? Great. And they spend a bit of time in the UK, in England, and then in March 1617, they board a ship to return to Virginia because obviously that's where the business is and all of these things wants to do. Pocahontas falls ill almost immediately. She's unwell with something. They think she probably, you know, picked up something nasty in London, as a lot of us do, and is taken ashore at this town called Gravesend, which is in Kent, but at the mouth of the Thames. And because she's considered to be too unwell to do the journey, and her son is taken ashore with her, Thomas, who would at this point would have been 2 years old. And she unfortunately dies and is buried in Gravesend. Her son survives, so Thomas survives. She's buried in St. George's Church in Gravesend at the age of 21 years old. So not very. Unfortunately, the church itself then burned down in the 18th century, and we don't know the exact location of her burial. We know she's buried there, but because of the damage to the site, we don't know exactly where she was buried. So she ended up 21 years old, buried in Gravesend in Kent. Bizarre. Her son, Thomas, John Rolfe went back to America because he'd basically been pressured to go back because of the business. Her son, Thomas, stayed in England, ended up in the care of his uncle, Henry. John Rolfe went back to America to continue with the tobacco industry. And by 1618, so a year later, over £40,000, which is roughly what that's... say, just under 20,000 kilos of tobacco is being shipped from Virginia to England. Mm. So it's massive business. The other thing that happens, so in 1620, Pocahontas is dead by this time. This is not her fault. John Rolfe's letters to England include the earliest mention of the arrival of an African slaver ship. Because the tobacco industry is extremely labour-intensive, they didn't want to pay for labour. So thus slavery became the way forward.
Which made it more profitable.
Oh, absolutely. Rolfe married again, but he died in 1622. Thomas Rolfe, their son, lived on to be 65 years old. And he ended up going back to Virginia and making a fair amount of money out of tobacco and land and all the things. Partly because the big advantage Thomas Rolfe had was that he was the first known, recorded, officially recognised child of both an Englishman and a Native American woman. And this gave him quite a lot of status as a kind of negotiator between the two parties, as his mother had been.
His mother was of rank, of course.
Yes, exactly. In Britain, his mother was considered to be a princess, even though she wasn't, because chiefdom and monarchy don't work the same way. But she apparently thought this was all a bit bizarre. But yeah. And she did, like I say, she is held to be responsible for actually maintaining peace between the colonists and the local tribes. So, you know, such a thing. Interesting thing is, because of course, you know, people love to do that whole, who are the descendants of this person? They estimate, and obviously if you've got someone who was around 400 years ago, they're going to end up with a lot of descendants because, you know. But one of Thomas Rolfe's, so Pocahontas' son's descendants is actually the actor Edward Norton from Fight Club. Who knew? So, obviously, I'm not going to be playing Colours of the Wind or whatever it is from the Disney movie Pocahontas, but I have found this other song, which is by a band called Sihasin. And Sihasin are an indigenous American band. And they have this song, which is called Fight Like a Woman, which I think is more apt, given the circumstances. So, hopefully, Sue so can...
We've got music.
We have...
Once upon a time, a fairy tale, it wasn't mine. a woman portrayed. But what he said, words were fed. Roll up your sleeves, come as you are.
Go, what a tune. So I was just saying to Sue that, funnily enough, April the 5th is also, April the 5th, 1871, was also the day that Isaac Featherstone became the first official diplomat of New Zealand. He was appointed New Zealand Agent General in London, partly because Julius Vogel wanted to get him out of New Zealand and use his persuasive skills to encourage people to move to... I didn't really know this. Did you know that he, Isaac Featherstone, actually ended up in a duel with William Wakefield, as of Wakefield Street?
Right.
Featherstone Street and Wakefield Street ended up having a duel because, okay, Featherstone came to New Zealand in 1841 with his daughter, with his wife and one of his children. He ended up having, 12 children. Only one of them was born outside of New Zealand. And he came in as surgeon superintendent of the New Zealand Company to work in the new city of Wellington that they'd been massively bigged up about. He got here and discovered that Wellington wasn't all quite those, what it had been sold as.
All those straight lines.
Wasn't quite what it was meant to be in the advertising. So he then became, that's when he got into politics, because he basically started lobbying on behalf of the settlers for compensation. And he actually won. They got compensation from the New Zealand company, whose representatives in Wellington were the Wakefields. So the Wakefields didn't like him. He ended up at some point, bizarrely enough, having a 1847, there was an armed duel set between him and William Wakefield in Tiaro. And apparently Featherstone survived it because Wakefield refused to shoot dead a man with seven daughters. The great
something
part,
like that, yes.
I mean, honestly, talk about history just not changing. So Featherstone was sent to the UK to negotiate for the retention of two British regiments in New Zealand on behalf of Vogel. He failed in that, but he came back with a loan, a British loan for £1 million to fund what do New Zealand governments really, really love more than anything else?
I don't know. At the moment, I'm
begins
thinking,
with R.
Roads.
Roads.
At the moment, he I'm came thinking, back with, it's national, it's
yeah.
roads.
Yeah, he came back with £1 million to build new roads.
The roads.
Even though Vogel's obviously famous for building the railways. Anyway, so that's another April the 5th thing. There you go. April the 5th, it's a busy, busy time in the world of international diplomacy and politics. I've got a much funner one, though. It's not aliens. It's not America. It's the other A in April.
The other A?
The other A in April. ABBA.
ABBA?
ABBA. ABBA. 5th of April is the birthday of Agnetha Fältskog, the blonde one from ABBA. So today is her 76th birthday.
That's amazing.
Amazing, yes. And more amazing, this is stretching it a little bit. I'm stretching as far as I can. Tomorrow, April the 6th, is the 52nd anniversary of ABBA winning Eurovision. Ta-da! With the song Waterloo, which is about, these connections never end, Napoleon being defeated by the Duke of Wellington. Ta-da! Wellington again. Here we go. Pew, pew, pew.
So, it wasn't on the 5th of April, though.
That wasn't on the 5th of April. No, sorry. That was on the 18th of June. That would have been too much.
It would have been, no.
If that had been the 5th of April, I wouldn't be here because I would have passed away with excitement over the nerdy vote.
Synchronicity.
Synchronicity, exactly. So I think on that note, we should just give Waterloo a blast, if you can line it up, Sue. Sue's like, what? Two songs in such quick succession?
We can line up Waterloo.
Let's do it. And I'll give you some Waterloo facts about the song, not the battle.
Yeah.
ABBA, Waterloo. Waterloo, which I've realised for years I got this lyrics wrong. I thought it was, how does it feel now you've won the war? And it's, I was defeated, you won the war, which is much more depressing. Waterloo was...
But it feels like I win when I lose.
I know. ABBA lyrics, honestly, and we will get on to this because ABBA lyrics, a lot of people don't... I've, again, I think it's part of a... I don't know if it's an autism or an ADHD thing, but I do read the lyrics to everything and I'm often quite surprised when people don't quite get what the song was about.
It does have that...
slightly masochistic.
Well, does the Eurovision unhinged kind of component, though?
It does. It does. And interesting enough, so, okay, interesting Eurovision fact here. So they won Eurovision 1974. They had, ABBA had been formed by Benny and Bjorn, and Benny's then girlfriend Anna Frida and Bjorn's then girlfriend Agneta, who they went on, both couples went on to marry. All of them were successful performers in their own right in Sweden before ABBA was formed. They all had pretty successful careers.
It's a super group.
Yeah, they were a super group. And one of the reasons that they formed was partly because Benny and Bjorn wanted to have a pop at Eurovision, and they had a go the year before and they didn't get through. So Waterloo was specifically written for Eurovision, and it was interesting enough, so between prior to 1974, all countries were obliged to sing in their native tongue. So for 1974, 1975, 1976, you were allowed to sing in any language you wanted. So this was the first time a foreign country sang in English. So, yeah, weird quirk there. Between 1976 and 1999, they changed it back. You had to sing in your native language. It's probably a British rule to make it easier for us to win. I don't know. So they had this kind of slightly strange advantage in that they could then, say, record in English. Waterloo the Song was actually number three in New Zealand in 1974. Did quite well in the charts. It did, obviously, massively popular in Europe, massively popular in Australasia, not so big in America, which is why they are not in, they're quite low in the top 10 of best-selling bands of all time. But they're the only, I think, non-English native speaking band in the top 10, bizarrely enough.
Mm.
Yeah. So it's all basically British bands, and then you get ABBA and the Eagles. And they're ahead of the Eagles, which makes me very happy for personal reasons.
Good. Yes.
Yeah. So there's this, as I say, so, and it, again, because it was back in the days with Eurovision where you didn't have public voting or anything like that, you just had a little, you either had an individual job or a judge or a jury for each country. And the famous thing, obviously, was that nul point was, you know, we're giving you nothing. And the only country that gave ABBA nul point in Eurovision 1974 were the British. And we think that's because the British knew they were a competition at the time. Who knows? Obviously, ABBA went on to become massive, absolutely massive. But again, because most of our current knowledge about ABBA comes through things like Mamma Mia and, you know, modern musical versions of things, and ABBA Gold, which has all kind of lots of the fluffy songs. But ABBA were quite a surreal band, if you really paid attention to them. And they released some quite interesting and intriguing songs. The album that I really loved when I was a kid was ABBA the Album. And ABBA the Album had all sorts of peculiar songs on it, including one that's kind of almost like a prog rock song called Eagle, which is about, based on the, what's that book about the seagull, Jonathan Livingston?
Jonathan Livingston Seagull.
Seagull, yeah. And it's about, you know, being a bird that can fly over mountains. It's quite good. It's quite melodramatic, sweeping strings and all of this stuff. They also had a song about, there were three songs which were meant to be part of a mini musical, one of which is called I'm a Marionette, which is basically about being treated like an object rather than the person within the music industry. And it's all about, you know, you like me as long as I look the right way in the cameras and I do this and I, you know, you pull my strings and I do what you want me to do, then we're all happy. So it's kind of, some of it's quite dark. It's quite interesting. Their last what I consider to be their kind of last proper album, although technically Voyage is the last album, which came out when they did the tour thing, Avatar tour thing that's on at Wembley. Their last proper studio album was an album called The Visitors, which came out in, I think, 81, I think, 80 or 81. And The Visitors actually got them banned from the Soviet Union. I know. So you don't think this with ABBA, do you? You think fluffy pop tunes, tra-la-la-la-la. Because, and the reason it got them banned was because the single, The Visitors, from it, is about the KGB or secret police coming and kicking down your door and dragging you away. And it got this, they actually were in part of their campaign called Let Poland Be Poland, trying to encourage the basic liberation of Poland from the Soviet Union. And so this got them banned from the Soviet, this album was banned, they were banned from the Soviet Union. So they were political dissidents. Who knew? And if you actually listen, so I'm going to get Sue to play The Visitors because it's not what you expect of an ABBA song. You expect kind of jolly, jolly pop, pop. And then you get this thing which is actually very intriguing. So if Sue can line that up for us. It was originally titled, I think, Cracking Up, which you will see as part of the chorus. But yeah, have a listen to the lyrics.
And then we're going out to the door.
Yeah. Ooh, here we go, buttons are being pressed.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.